Just like you, we're working hard to boost our direct booking strategy and reduce our dependence on Airbnb. But we were a little bit nervous about how we would verify guests who book directly with us. That's why we've started using Know Your Guest by Superhog.
Know Your Guest introduces guest screening seamlessly into our reservation process, allowing us to authenticate guest details in real time across multiple databases. This prevents fraud and unwanted parties. Talk about incredible peace of mind.
Plus, Superhog offers a damage waiver program to cover damages efficiently. You can leverage their damage protection plan that offers unmatched short-term rental protection up to $5 million for all verified bookings.
With Know Your Guest by Superhog, we're scaling our direct bookings without all the worry. Just click the link in our show notes and book your free Superhog demo today.
You're listening to the Thanks for Visiting podcast. We believe hosting with heart is at the core of every short-term rental. With Annette's background in business operation
and Sarah's extensive hospitality management and interior design experience, we have welcomed thousands of guests from over 30 countries, earning us over $1 million and garnering us thousands of five-star reviews.
We love sharing creative ways for your listing to stand out, serve your guests, and be profitable. Each episode, we will have knowledgeable guests who bring value to the short-term rental industry.
Or we will share our stories of our own experiences so you can implement actual improvements to your rentals. Whether you're experienced, new, or nervous to start your own short-term rental, we promise you'll feel right at home. Before we dive into the content, let's hear a word from our sponsor.
Hosting hot tip. You know how we're always on the hunt for awesome pieces for our short-term rentals?
Well, we're going to let you in on our secret weapon. It is Manoan. They have steep discounts on over 100 top brands. Think Wayfair, Article, West Elm, Crate & Barrel, Pollywood, Parachute, Bello. The list goes on and on. But these discounts are for hosts and designers for hosts only.
I had my eye on this awesome coffee table from Wayfair, wanting to give our listing that wow factor, but you know us. We are all about having our numbers dialed in and staying budget friendly.
And that's where Manoan stepped in with an awesome discount. And here's the kicker. Becoming a member is totally free. Yes, I said free. F-R-E-E. No cost to join. No monthly membership. It is completely free. But these discounts are exclusive. You do have to be a host or a designer for hosts.
Once you're a member, all you have to do is head to their site, install their browser extension, which makes shopping so, so simple, and purchase and fill your shopping cart in just a few clicks. And it's not just furniture and decor. Restock your most used items anytime you need to refill your supply area.
Exactly. And the best part, again, no catch. There's no fees, nada. Just major discounts waiting for you. Being a Manoan member is like being a VIP host without breaking the bank.
So head on over to ManoanExperience.com. That's M-I-N-O-A-N experience.com, or just simply click the link in our show notes and sign up and let the savings begin. Hey, new hosts. Are you swimming in a sea of questions like, how do I deter parties? How many towels should I have and where should I get them? What sheet should I use? What smart lock is best? What are the best practices when listing on Airbnb? How do I write a good title and description? Or maybe you don't even have your first property yet and you're wondering where to find it and how to know if it's a good deal. Well, we've been working on a solution to help new hosts get all their questions answered for over a year now, and we're finally proud and ready to share with you Thanks for Visiting's Hosting Handbook. It is the ultimate step-by-step digital resource guide for new hosts. The Hosting Handbook includes searchable videos and resources specifically tailored for you, the new host. Have a question about how to price your property? Use the Hosting Handbook's search functionality and type in pricing and boom. Videos and resources all about pricing your property will populate. Want to know what to include in your short-term rental kitchen? Just type in kitchen. Videos of Annette and me in an actual running short-term rental kitchen will appear, walking you through all the do's and don'ts we've learned over our 10 plus years of hosting. We've been stockpiling host questions for years, including what to do when a guest asks you challenging questions about discounts and pricing and so much more. Get all the videos, downloads, and resources you need to fast track yourself from new host to super host. Go to thanksforvisiting.com/handbook. That's thanksforvisiting.com/handbook. Get the ultimate blueprint for hosting today.
Hello, welcome back for another great episode. My name is Sarah Karakayan.
I'm Annette Grant, and together we are...
Thanks for visiting. Let's start this episode like we do each and every week, and that is featuring one of you, our incredible listeners, who's using our hashtag, STRShareSunday. If you use it on Instagram, we'll share you here on the podcast on Instagram to our entire email list. Annette, who are we sharing this week?
This week, we are sharing at Coops, C-O-O-P-S, Vacation Rentals. That's at Coops Vacation Rentals. And they're in the Gulf Shores. Sarah, when am I ever going to go to the Gulf Shores with you to see your beach flip?
How dare you bring that up?
Well, listeners, if you don't know, Sarah did an HGTV show on Gulf Shores a while ago. We need to have like a binge.
It actually was good.
Sarah, can we like...
I have a little bit of...
We're going to maybe schedule a watch with our listeners here. See, I don't know if we could do that on Zoom.
I can give you the Cliffs notes. I cry a lot. They sent me the wrong countertops.
Okay.
We didn't win.
But we're still going to buy a place in Gulf Shores,
okay,
right?
I like okay. it. Yeah, absolutely.
But Coops Vacation Rentals, I want to highlight two things. And the reason these are fresh on my mind is I actually just got back from a trip on the beach. And the house that we rented, it slept 10. But I want to tell you something that I thought the space-wise that I loved. There was so much parking. And there is so much parking here at Coops Vacation Rentals. And what I love is they actually show it in the photos on the listing. And it's rare that you see someone show how much parking there is. But I think now that I've experienced it this week, like we had five SUVs because it was a beach town. You had to bring all of your linens, all of your beach towels, we brought a lot of stuff, bikes. And so that is an important thing. Like it made our time so much more enjoyable that we could all park our cars and use them if so needed. And the other thing that Coops Vacation Rentals has that we didn't have that I would have loved is they supply an EV charger. And they are being very vocal about that. It's in their listing. They show pictures of it. And my nephew had a Tesla and he had to charge it before we left. And so that was slightly annoying. So I just want to say Coops Vacation Rental is two of those things that really I was paying attention to on this last trip. He is crushing it by showing that to his guests that you can charge your electric vehicle and there is plenty of parking, not only for your electric vehicle, but anybody else that comes along. And so as hosts, sometimes I think there's small things like that we forget to add. So if you have great parking for your guest, add that in your photos. Let them know, oh my gosh, you know, we know XYZ has a Suburban. They're going to be able to park that or someone else is coming with a car. We're going to have four or five cars. So that can become something that's really annoying to a guest. And I don't know about you, but also it's another sales pitch of like, if you stay at a hotel, it's like $50 a night to valet. So do the math there if you're trying to get someone to stay with you, is like parking is free, you know, in all these spots. So Coops, way to go with the EV charger, thinking ahead, and then also with all of the parking spaces and letting your guests know there's room for them there.
Before we dig into today's episode, Annette, I want to do a little internal survey. You just said this here on the podcast, and then you kind of talked about it on our Instagram account when you were on vacation. But let's just quickly talk about bringing your own sheets and towels. So we did a survey on Instagram, and so many hosts who are in quote-unquote traditional beach vacation rental towns, and I would say 99% of you who responded to it, I would say maybe 20 people, said that they supply the sheets and towels. So how was it as a guest? I mean, obviously you are a very discerning guest because of what you do full time with Thanks for Visiting. But like truly, what was it like to bring home your dirty sheets on the plane?
I have to be honest that I was a guest of the, obviously I was a guest, but I was also like a secondary guest as
right.
My brother and sister-in-law had rented the beach home.
Of course.
So my sister-in-law got the brunt of it because I actually left a little early also. But I can tell you, that's why I think we had so many cars, because we had to bring linens for six beds. And it was so much. So it was linens, towels, and also she had a friend that lived on the island and she actually didn't have twin sheets at all. Like she just doesn't have them at our house. So her friend had to bring those over because she's like, I don't want to buy twin sheets for 1 week.
Right.
The one thing I did enjoy about it, though, is I knew they were super clean and I knew where they were coming from.
That's true.
So there was parts of it that I was like, oh, like I'm making this bed. This is the pillow. This is the pillowcase. I see the mattress.
Wait, did you have to bring the pillows? Like your pillow?
That part, again, I was the guest of the host. You know, I don't know if those were their pillows or not.
Oh.
I think they supplied pillows. I do think they supply pillows. But again, I like that. I could see there was mattress protectors everywhere. I could see that there were pillow protectors. So I got to see the before and like, making my own bed, I mean, it made me want to buy a beach house where you didn't have to bring the linens. 1,000%. I'm like, Sarah, what are we doing? We need to go to a place where... The other thing that we didn't do that we could have done is obviously rented them through a linen company and had them delivered and picked up.
Okay.
But I should shop that. I think I wrote down the linen company specifically there to see how much it would add on to the trip.
Your stay.
But I can share that it took me 3 minutes to make my bed. It took me no minutes to strip my bed.
I feel like you're being very diplomatic. Did you like it or not? What would you have rathered?
I can share that this house did not meet all of my cleanliness standards.
Okay.
So I'm actually glad that I had to make my bed. So in this situation, I'm glad that I know my sister-in-law laundered the sheets. I know where they were coming from. I'm the one that put them in. I did get to see the mattresses.
Oh, so you didn't bring your sheets, your sister-in-law. Not only did she get this property, but they also brought linens.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like I was a guest. Like I didn't have to bring,
but do they listen to the podcast?
My family?
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes. But...
Oh, no. Okay. Well, hopefully they don't listen to this.
No.
I want to be able to speak freely because here's the deal. Okay. But
if I would have had to pack them like in my suitcase, no way. That's why I'm saying they brought them from their home. That's why we had all these SUVs and like.
But and also here's my question.
So like
when you, I wonder if your sister-in-law, as she was, you know, organizing this and prepping this and then having to bring sheets, do you think she was like cursing?
Oh, absolutely. And she was like, oh my gosh, like. No wonder, like this is going to take me a full day or two when I get home doing all this laundry. Yeah, it was a lot of work. And they had like, she had to specifically purchase those like IKEA zip bags that you can get on Amazon. She brought like 5 of those because we also had to bring all of our own beach towels. So again, that's why we had 5 SUVs. We had a lot of stuff. Plus we brought all of our own food. We only went out to dinner once.
The food I love. Like, that's cool.
Yeah.
All right. I just wanted to know, like...
But the linens, but as a host, I mean, as like thinking about through the, like, financials of it, I'm like, this is brilliant.
I wonder, if anyone out there, like, is a part of this, like, culture. It's basically cultural. I can tell that. Like, it's like, this island, this is how they do it. They've been in this way for years. It's not broke. Don't fix it. Yep. But I wonder as, like, the vacation rental boom, right? The Airbnb boom. And now, like, all these hosts do supply towels. I wonder if they get pushback. Like, what the heck? I wonder if... Are people staying elsewhere? I just wonder what that impact is.
Or if I, just letting you know, if I don't know how close I would have read, let's be honest, if I booked this place and I showed up there with no sheets and towels.
Yeah. Was it like a Target nearby?
Amazon. I don't know.
Okay. All right. I just needed to know.
We can do a whole episode on that property and that island.
Okay. But on to someone who definitely supplies... the bedding and the towels, because this is an ultimate luxurious experience that we're going to take you on, everyone tuning in. We met Nick Taylor when we were somehow invited to a castle stay in the UK. And we were immediately enchanted by Nick's accent, of course, but he is from Cape Town and he runs a boutique short-term rental management company. And I know a lot of our listeners, a majority of you, you own your own properties, you manage your own properties, and then sometimes you're so good at it, your friends, family, acquaintances ask you to manage theirs too, and so you end up accidentally starting a co-hosting business. But if any of you out there, you know, love this industry and you're thinking about ways that you can sink your teeth more into this industry, this episode is going to be amazing for you because Annette and I knew we needed to open up our horizons to learning from people in this industry that are outside of the United States. Because the way people think about things, the opportunities they have that opens up their minds. For example, I'll give you a little bit of a teaser. Labor in Cape Town is a lot less expensive than it is for us here in the United States.
And like when we say
a lot less.
Like one clean is what he could probably pay a team member for a whole month's worth of service.
Yes.
In a large property.
And while we recognize that, okay, we cannot copy what Nick does, you know, here in the United States, it does make our brains kind of think, okay, but how could I emulate that? How could I introduce that or a fraction of that into my own business? And that's what Annette and I mean by opening up our horizons in terms of how other people. So if you've noticed some of the international flavor we've been bringing to the podcast, it really is in an effort to help us help you guys think outside the box. But Nick, I mean, he manages, what did he say, Annette? Like $150 million of property in his property management. Mm-hmm. And he's very specific on the kind of properties he manages.
Must have tourism appeal.
Yes.
That was a new term for me.
We loved it.
Let's get onto the show.
Nick from Knox, welcome to the show. We are so excited to dig into your multifaceted background in the hospitality industry. But why don't you take us back to the early days of Nick Taylor and where you got your start in hospitality?
Thank you so much for having me on the show, Sarah and Annette. Really, really pleased to be here. And I can't wait for our time together. Where do we go back? I know in the United States, it's there's a number of operators that have sort of 20, 25, 30 years of experience in this industry. But I started off leaving school in 1999 and studying hotel management, and wasn't quite sure why I ended up doing hotel management, but that's where I found myself, and did that for a year and a half. And then after I finished, I had to do some training, and a company from the United Kingdom, from London, came out to recruit us young South African students, because apparently we work really hard, and managed to get myself in a flight and headed off to London, England in 2001 at the age of 19 years old, and ended up working in a hotel group that had seven of the top 10 hotels on TripAdvisor in London, a company called Red Carnation Hotels, and had 5 years with them. And worked in the front office and operations, high touch, high level hospitality, like really, really top 5-star sort of service levels. And I came back to South Africa in 2006 because my then girlfriend, now my wife's father, passed away very unexpectedly. And I was just looking for work for 6 months. And then we were actually going to emigrate to Canada. I've got a Canadian passport. My grandparents were Canadian. And I saw this advert on a Craigslist equivalent called Gumtree here in South Africa. And it was, you know, it was a startup. And my business partner now, Richard Marshall, pretty much said, I need somebody to help me with my tax returns and to do my books because I've just started this little business and I have no idea what's going on with the actual business. But I'm driving around with mops coming out of my back window and meeting guests at all kinds of crazy hours of the day, and haven't really focused on the business side of things. Now, when I was in London, I studied finance and accounting, hotel finance and accounting at Chartered Accounting. So I said to him, well, I'm here for 6 months and then I'm going, I can help you get your bank reconciliations done. And I walked into an office in 2006 into an industry that I knew absolutely nothing about, that I couldn't find much on the internet about, and kind of arrived straight out of London in a suit and tie and fully dressed up and kitted, and people are walking around in jeans and trainers and T-shirts. And I said, well, this is a little bit of a change in environment. But the first few years was more just about trying to understand the business and trying to understand what this was and how this could be compared to the formal hotel sector that I'd find myself in after I'd studied. And I remember going to a trade show. Richard Marshall, my partner, he said to me, hey, why don't you come on a trade show? And I said, what's that? He said, no, we're going to go find some business. So I said, well, that sounds interesting. So we went up to Durban, which is about a 2-hour flight from where I live in Cape Town, and arrived at this trade show, which was a tourism convention. And this was an intersection of all kinds of supply and demand, buyers coming in from Europe, from the US, all over to come and find an interesting product in South Africa. And Richard and I had a stand next to a global hotel chain, and we were trying to stop the German tour operators predominantly at our stand to say, like, hey, we've got a private home, but you want to come and put your guests that you send to South Africa into a private home rather than this big hotel? And they all kind of looked at us pretty weirdly, like, what are you doing? Is that we're not familiar with this as a product in this industry? And it was a hard sell. But what it did do is for the first 15 years of our business before Airbnb came along, is it allowed us to create a base of international tour operators and travel agents. South Africa is a long-haul tourism destination and there's a fair amount of hand-holding. So what tends to happen is that people will come on a sort of once-in-a-lifetime trip to South Africa to come and see the big five, see the animals, and just come and explore a part of the world that they've perhaps never been to. And to do that, it's always useful for them to have a destination expert holding their hand along the way. So we actually built the business. 70% of our business was through third-party travel agents and tour operators, and about 30% came direct. This is in the days, this is early or late O's and early 2010s, 2011s, that kind of stage. Airbnb and Booking.com hadn't even cottoned on to the fact that this was a segment in the market that they could access. Airbnb wasn't even a thought at that point in time. But what that allowed us to do is to create a sort of an environment of two our presidential travel agents really trusted our brand and products. And that put a lot of pressure on us to make sure that we were delivering service and standards which were exactly the same as what they could expect in the global hotel chain. And that's all they wanted. They just wanted service guarantee and brand standards. And off the back of that, we were kind of forced into making some standards, implementing some standards which were akin to what you could get in a five-star hotel. Daily housekeeping, Monday through Saturday. That comes as a standard in our rates. It's built, it's baked into our rates, baked into our service provisions. In-person meet and greet, on-call 24/7 concierge, you know, all the bells and whistles, your cable, television, everything that we could possibly do to try and mirror, you know, shopping experience where guests could pre-stock their, and that still happens to this day, they can pre-stock their villas with groceries and get in-room massages and airport transfers, you name it. We're a full-service, full concierge. And that's where we are today, 20-odd years later.
When you started with Richard, though, with the mops coming out of everywhere in his car, how many houses, when you answered that Gumtree, I think you said was the site, how many houses were under management at that time?
I think we had about 12.
Did you guys own all of those, or were those all owned by other owners?
So Richard also kind of fell into the industry. He was in banking in London, came back, and his parents owned a guest house in Camps Bay, an area of seaside location here in Cape Town. And they decided to go off on a trip for a 3-month overland trip through Africa. And they kind of said to him, well, here are the keys, look after the place. And there was a big property boom in the early 2000s in Cape Town. And we were suddenly, you know, South Africa, after being in isolation for so many years, became quite a popular tourism destination, was very affordable, and an investment destination. So we would literally have, you know, predominantly British tourists and German tourists coming to South Africa, having an absolutely terrific time, lying on the beach, going to the estate agency on the beachfront and going, well, you know, that's only sort of £50,000 or dollars. I'm going to buy that. And they would literally buy it and get on the plane 2 hours later and then kind of go, well, what now? And this is when Richard started realizing that there was a whole lot of lights on, but nobody really staying. And just through word of mouth and being local, living in the market, people started saying, hey, I'll be back in 3 months. Can you look after my place and make sure that, you know, you can flush the toilets and keep the lights on? And Richard said, yeah, sure, no problem. It just grew very organically off that. So he had been doing that for about 3 years before I joined him in 2006. And it was real startup territory. It was an absolute mess.
What did you, when you came over from your hotel experience, what was the first thing that you saw that was like, why are we doing it this way? We've got to mirror what your 5-star hotels were doing. What was something that you injected immediately into the business?
Yeah, well, it was to do with service standards, ultimately. I mean, you know, hotels have got it so down pat. It's systematic. It's all under one roof. You can kind of guarantee your level of service. And when I arrived in 2006 at Knox, you know, we didn't have the technology to be able to help service standards. So it was all sort of clipboards and pieces of paper. And, you know, it was a completely different world almost 20 years ago. So Richard and I started spending quite a bit of time on the operation side of things, and more importantly, on rates, pricing, and distribution. Back then, we used to have an Excel spreadsheet, which we sent out to our tour operators on a Monday morning with the calendar for the next sort of 6 months, with blocks on the Excel spreadsheet with, you know, this property's booked and the rates were static. They were locked in for that period of time, and then we'd send an update the following Monday. So we actually, well, Richard's father is a software developer, and we started building some technology to be able to distribute our rates and pricing in real time to our network of international tour operators and travel agents, and just try and make the whole process a lot more efficient. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, coming from a hotel operator background, Richard came from a business background, his father was a software developer. We just kind of started fusing everything together and implementing some really, really strict service standards and making sure that we're accountable to ourselves as well as our guests and our owners.
There are hosts out there, and I think these hosts come from a standpoint of getting a little defensive, maybe because I actually don't know why, but they'll say, well, we're not a hotel though. We're a vacation home.
So if you heard someone say that to you, Nick, knowing what you know now by going through your traditional training and now 20 years of being in the vacation rental industry, what would you say to someone who maybe says that to you? Like, well, we're not a hotel, we're a vacation rental home.
It's a good question. The product and the service delivery is different, but the underlying index, the underlying base of what we're providing ultimately is a head on the bed. And whether it's a guest house, an igloo, or whatever you're doing, if you're providing somewhere for someone to sleep for a night, you're providing accommodation. And whether that's in the form of a hotel, vacation rental, guest house, bed and breakfast, it doesn't matter. Ultimately, the principles remain the same, and that is that you're in the hospitality business. And yes, we're not a hotel, but we provide the same thing. People make decisions based on whether they should stay in a hotel or an Airbnb, you know, that or a guest house. If they need somewhere to sleep, yes, some people might choose a vacation rental over a hotel because of past experiences. That's what they want, depending on the type of experience they're looking for. But we're competing directly with hotels and guest houses and bed and breakfasts every single day of our life.
I want to know more about what's become important to you and your business partner over the years. From your spreadsheet with your pricing blocked for the week and then getting the update the next week to where we're at today, where we have so much data and so much information, down to the brand standards that you introduced all those years ago and how those have changed over the years. Today in 2024, with the boom we just had, you know, after COVID and all that, what do you think is more important? Is it the happy guest? Is it the revenue that you bring in, whether it's for an owner or yourself as the investor? Is it, you know, profit margins? Like, what do you guys use as your North Star? What is your main focus? And everything else will fall into place if you hit this nail on the head.
The epicenter of what we do is the happy guest. If you have unhappy guests, you don't have a business. You're unable to deliver service. You're unable to get referrals, recommendations. At the North Star is the happy guest. If the guest is happy, the byproducts of that happy guest are revenue, and if you can control your costs, ultimately profit. But if you have a happy guest, we always kind of think about this and have for the last 20 odd years, what is more important? Is it the guest or the homeowner? And we have two clients, and that's what makes it really, really an interesting industry. And what creates the juggle, isn't it? We have owner representative teams, we have guest service concierge teams. We're not too sure who's more important. Obviously, the owner at the core of it is our asset. And without the owner, we don't have that base to be able to deliver happy guests. But if we have happy guests, we're going to have happy owners. So no one can really answer that question. It's probably a good poll to put out. Who is more important, a happy guest or a happy owner? And our owners often say, you're always looking after your guests, you don't look after me, because we are very much more guest-centric as an organization than we have been owner-centric. And only over the last 2 or 3 years have we really started to focus on the owner experience through our organization more than the guest experience. But ultimately, most of our KPIs and metrics and how we manage our teams and performance is done on guest reviews and guest feedback. Because we know that those reviews and feedback will enhance an experience for a future guest and allow us to build a stronger relationship with our partners. We call our owners our partners. We routinely send out all the guest reviews to our owners. We're not hiding anything. That we have an owner dashboard of the technology we use. We recently started working with Boom, which has an owner portal, which has all the guest data in there. And that holds ourselves to account with our owners, because if there's one or two bad reviews in there, the owner's just going to go, well, what are you guys doing? Is it the property or is it your service? So you have to have that guest service right up at the North Star. And then naturally, the owners will be happy. Revenue will come in and profit will be a lagging indicator of guest satisfaction.
Let's talk about unhappy guests. What can you offer to Sarah, myself, and everybody listening? What is your triage when there is an unhappy guest? What do you see just like works for you every time to transition them from an unhappy guest to a happy guest?
ultimately, you've got to make the guest feel like the most important person in the world right there and then. And there is nothing worse than having an unhappy guest leave your vacation. It is the worst thing ever. You know that they've been a little bit disgruntled. They've complained about one or two things along the way. And then it gets to the end of your stay and you just had that kind of bad feeling. It's like an emotional feeling in within your body or your team, and everybody knows that this guest hasn't been happy. So it's our mission to try and make sure that before that guest leaves, they have had some very, very hands-on, high-service interactions with us. We've worked on some form of a compromise or compensation or a discount on a future stay, or given them something which they may not have experienced. And we often find, and when it comes to unhappy guests, I hate giving financial compensation. It's the worst thing ever, because what happens is that you refund them by Airbnb or put some money back in their bank account and they move on and that's all forgotten. So what we make a really big effort to try and do is to say, like, listen, Mrs. Guest, we know we've messed up here. We haven't, you know, we didn't check the air conditioning was working properly, or we didn't foresee that the hot water would stop working or whatever might have happened. But you know what? We'd love to treat you to something that you might not have thought about. And they go, oh, really, what's that? And we go, we're going to put a beach picnic down for you. Would you like to have a beach picnic? Or would you like to have some kind of an awesome tourism-related experience in and around Cape Town, which is on us? Because we know that if you have a good experience, which we've done, which has exceeded any kind of realistic expectation, they're going to remember that. South Africa's well known for its wine. We live in the wine region here in Cape Town. We often send wine after the guests have left. If they've been a little bit unhappy, we'll send some wine off to them in Germany or the United Kingdom and just leave them as a little token of goodwill to go, like, really sorry, we messed up. Enjoy some South African wine and hopefully we'll be able to share a glass in the future again.
And I don't want to gloss over that feedback, Nick, because we just discussed how it is complicated, especially listeners out there, if you're a co-host, right? Like, you start managing for other people, or if you own and operate your own properties, guest criticism or guest feedback or something going wrong that feels very out of your control, we have to own the fact that we do have control over turning it around. If they are the North Star, if it starts with them, then everything dominoes from them having a great stay for the longevity of our business. And Nick, I mean, you guys have been in business for so long and you can look back and say, all of those beach picnics, all of those investments we made on turning that unhappy guest around, it must be worth it for the longevity of your business and making sure that you stand out amongst a sea of people who don't do those things and let the guests leave unhappy, leave those terrible negative reviews. So how do you measure that turnaround of that guest? Or what is the KPI that you guys do when it comes to an unhappy guest? What sort of documenting do you do to help you learn from that mistake, whether or not it was something in your control or not, so that you can continue to improve? Because, I mean, we're always continuing to improve, but what do you guys do?
It's part of our business KPIs. We look at it every single week. We assess how many guest reviews have come in that are below our sort of standards and targets. We discuss it at a leadership level. Myself and Richard are in those meetings every single Monday, and we go through any guest that might have had issued us with a negative or a review which isn't as good as what we would have liked. In terms of how we prevent it in the future, it's very challenging. Yeah, you know, you can implement service standards. You can do as many pre-arrival checks as you possibly can, but it's hospitality. You're never going to be able to meet everybody's expectations. They might have booked something. You know, it's a little bit cold here in Cape Town at the moment. We have a number of guests in house at the moment who are complaining about it being too cold. And I'm sat there this morning in our leadership meeting, and I said, guys, I don't think we prepared well enough for winter. But, you know, we've got huge villas, three-story villas that are these massive mansions. And to warm up a very large building without, you know, having to implement all kinds of energy provisions is challenging. So what we try and do is just make sure that that guest leaves knowing that Knox at least tried something. We do not let a guest leave kind of going, well, they didn't care about me. I didn't feel as though they listened to anything that I was complaining about. So in terms of that, we also track and monitor every single guest feedback. Our staff are performance managed on it. They're incentivized. We've got a quarterly review system where we look at the performance of each single property, how their properties performed, and whether it's reached our targets. Our target is 4.8 out of 5, effectively. So that's what we're aiming for. Through the technology that we use, we're able to look at the service levels and all the reviews that we collect from the OTAs, as well as direct, as well as through our tour operators and travel agents. We ask for that feedback is effectively a management tool, and we're able to assess staff performance and service delivery across 80% of our staff who are in our operations. And we get a very clear indicator if a property is consistently not reaching that target. We are then not afraid of going to the homeowner and saying, you know, we're carrying your property in our portfolio at the moment. It's not hitting our targets. This is the guest feedback. We think that you really need to start looking at this and that. Otherwise, we might need to have a difficult conversation in the near future. And we're not afraid of doing that. We're not a business that wants to scale to, you know, 1,000 properties. We've currently got around about 200 under management. They're all really, really great homes, about $150 million under management. But the principle is that we'd rather have a portfolio that is delivering to our internal standards and KPIs than carrying stock and inventory, which is not able to give the chance of having a good guest experience.
So you celebrate quality over quantity inside of
100%. Absolutely.
So how do you select these owners? There's only 200 in the portfolio right now. I'm sure you have a lot of people that want to work with you. What's that checklist look like for someone to come on board?
Oh, we've got an extensive checklist. We've got to make sure. So our ultimate determination is what we call tourism appeal. So we look at a property, and if this property has tourism appeal or tourism potential, we start going, yeah, this is going to work for our portfolio because it's offering unique experience. And no disrespect to operators, you have thousands of units in condos and apart hotels, and that is that business model. That's absolutely fine. We tend to find it a little bit commoditized. We're at, you know, the essence of it, a hospitality organization providing great, unique tourism experiences and not necessarily just providing that head on the pillow. We want to make sure that every guest comes in and goes, wow, this is amazing. I love this villa. So things that we look out for in terms of the actual property is to make sure that it's well located, it's of a luxury standard, that it offers some form of view. We believe that views are ultra, ultra important. We won't take on a property that has a view of a brick wall of apartment building next door. It's got to have something that, you know, somebody's going to remember, and they're going to be able to tell their friends or come back to it. So we probably take on 4 in every 10 properties that we see.
Does the size matter in tourism appeal? I had to. Sorry. I just need to know.
Size matters everywhere, doesn't it?
But honestly, in tourism appeal, does the size matter in what the properties that you bring on? Is that a baseline?
We provide a better service if the property is larger. We're a hands-on property management company. We tend to find that the smaller one-bedroom and two-bedroom apartments are somewhat commoditized. The competitors can deliver a service which is perhaps a little bit more economical. With our brand standards, it comes with costs. You know, housekeeping 6 days a week—that's an owner cost, not a guest cost. I mean, that all gets charged onto the owner. Full-on guest toiletries, linen laundering. All of it's included in the fees that we charge our owners to improve the guest experience.
Wait a minute.
So, yeah, we got to slow that down.
Slow that down. Let me unpack that, Nick, and make sure I understand this. Because I will tell you, this runs rampant in the newer co-host space. And this is very interesting. I love turning things on their head. They are obsessed with the new co-hosts, the people who are just getting into property management, right? They are obsessed with, well, the guest has to pay for it in some way, shape, or form in their overnight accommodations fees. But you're saying that, yes, there is a market for the overnight accommodation fee, but everything else comes out of your owner's pocket. So how does that work out on the owner P&L? Are they paying to have the guest stay, essentially?
Our service standard, as I discussed earlier, is to offer housekeeping 6 days a week. Mm-hmm. And the cost of that type of service is inexpensive in South Africa. It's the labor market. If we can We can do it. It's not going to cost the owners. I've heard of some of the rates that are charged for an hour of cleaning in more developed countries, and we wouldn't be able to provide it. You know, it would cost thousands and thousands of dollars to homeowners. So in terms of a percentage of annual revenue to provide housekeeping 6 days a week, it's less than 5% of the annual revenue.
Got it. Okay. Well, I want to talk about an operations point of this, though. How do you communicate with the guest? Because a hotel room is different. I feel like someone actually, Steve Davis from Operto told us, like, an average hotel guest leaves a room like 11 times a day. How do you communicate with the guest the time that their room will be turned over? If there are hosts out there wanting to offer more of like a daily cleaning, what does daily cleaning entail?
Good question. So it depends on the property. Obviously, so our principle is that if the property is less than three bedrooms in size, that will typically have a full-time cleaner employed by Knox. We have 85 full-time housekeeping staff on our payroll. They will be shared amongst those smaller units. So a housekeeper will go into a property for a couple of hours, do a refresh clean, do the kitchen, make the beds for the guests, do a bit of a sweep and some light clean while the guests are in the house. How it's communicated is by our check-in, meet and greet staff. And in our guest books and our guidebooks and prior to arrival and all of our communication, we say heads up. And some guests don't want it. Some guests don't want to see anybody. And if they don't want a cleaner, that's absolutely fine. No problem at all. We'll strip that service out of their stay. Obviously, the larger the property, our cleaners, and we intentionally employ them because they become part of the organizational culture. They're incentivized, they're well looked after by our team, by our guests, by our owners. And especially in the larger homes, what happens is that they are 100% accountable for that villa. So we're able to performance manage them on that. They get to see the same guests who come back to that home, you know, 6 months or every year later, and they really look forward to seeing this cleaner in the home, and that they enhance the guest experience so much. They're a real asset for us because they're actually spending most time with guests than anyone else. They're in the property. And our guests love the authenticity of that type of an experience because they're actually able to sit down with somebody from Africa who comes from the local community and ask all kinds of interesting questions. And they build some really deep relationships. Our cleaners get left loads of tips, some wonderful food and wine and everything else when the guests leave. And yeah, they have a good time.
That's fascinating. Does each villa then, do you supply all of the linens, all of the cleaning, like everything stays within that property since that you have one cleaner assigned to it?
That's right. Nice. They go in Monday through Saturday, regardless if there's guests or not. They are fully employed. So there might be, you know, 10 days or 2 weeks between a reservation. They'll still go in Monday to Saturday. They'll do some deep cleaning. They'll make sure that property is 100% perfect. It is guest ready, regardless if there's been a guest that has left this morning and there's a changeover. But if there hasn't been a guest in that property for 2 weeks, it doesn't matter. That property is guest ready at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and we know it.
And then I have so many, Knox properties. Do you have the same exact sheets in every single property? Are they different? Just because there's so
much. It's from the same supplier, but all the beds are different. Some of these different shapes and sizes and extra length this and king and twins that can be broken up, and we need expanders and comforters and it becomes a little complicated. What we actually do when we onboard a property, and part of our checklist is to make sure that this property is equipped to be able to almost be self-sufficient and sustainable. So we've got to make sure that there's three sets of linen that we purchase for that property that belongs to that property and that owner. If they leave our management or they decide to look for a long-term rental or sell the property, that is all the owner's stock. So we spend an enormous amount of time at that onboarding phase to make sure that brand standards that we hold ourselves to can be delivered through that onboarding process. And that's down to the quality of the crockery and cutlery, linen, guest amenities and supplies. That's all done right from the onset. We know if we can get that onboarding right and do a check before it's guest ready, that property is going to be good to go. Yes.
What do you do with the cleaning supplies? Since these are full-time team members, I mean, we're in the US, we got Amazon, Costco, like, are you sending deliveries? Like, is your full-time team member communicating to you, I need more cleaning products? How does that purchasing and delivery happen for you?
That's right. I mean, we used to use Google Forms. It was a simple form submission from the cleaner, and they'd send it through. They would come through to our central office where we have stores. We hold all of our cleaning supplies, some stock in our storeroom. And then our hosts, who are effectively our guest relations staff, are running around picking up that delivery and taking it off back to the villa. We've recently moved to Boom, and Boom have a requisition and ordering system in the platform, which is actually really helpful because now we can start to see utilization at a villa level, and we're able to get some really decent analytics. We can start to see, well, this property's gone through 246 toilet rolls and they've only had 5 nights of occupancy. There's a problem here. What's going on?
It sounds like the family had a problem, not... I don't know. Okay, before we go down that path... Okay, Nick, I do want to pivot this conversation a little bit because you not only offer the hospitality services, but correct me if I'm wrong, you also have a real estate division, correct?
That's right.
Can you share... Because I want... Everyone who is out there who is obsessed with running their short-term rental, who loves this industry now, and they're thinking about ways that they can grow within it, and maybe it's not, you know, managing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of properties, how you've diversified your revenue. Talk to us about how you started down that. Was it always from the beginning? When did you decide to add that on? And are you glad you did that? Do you regret it? Tell us all the juicy details about having a real estate division.
We love our real estate division. It's small, it's boutique. It's never going to compete with a national real estate brand. We don't want it to. We started it about 6 years ago, but really started being quite serious about it during and just after COVID. Our tagline is Knox, rent, buy, manage, sell. So it's kind of a circle. You stay with us as a guest. You love your experience because we're delivering great hospitality and excellent services. And then we go, while you're in-house, hey, would you like a private property tour of some of our portfolio if you're interested in actually buying a property? And you know what? We can manage it for you. We're showing you how we can manage it because you're staying with us. And then, you know what? You like that villa? That's great. We can also give you all the financial forecasting and historical rental performance of that property, all your revenue, all your expenses, so you know exactly what you're buying. Roughly 80% of our portfolio is owned by foreign owners. So they will visit their properties at certain times during the year, and the rest of the time we've got the keys, we're managing it for them, then they come on holiday. So it makes sense for them to be able to actually get some income, pay the local rates and taxes, and leave some money here in South Africa for when they come on holiday and it's sitting here waiting for them. So that's really good. Obviously, we do have some owners who are very much investment orientated. They buy the property, the pure view to generate income and yield. But what happens is that our guests become our owners. A lot of our guests that have stayed with us end up becoming our homeowners and our clients.
How do you market? Because that's a fine line of, you know, you don't want to be too noisy at Knox about trying to sell, like I would call that an upsell on them buying the accommodation. So how do you bring in the hospitality to let them know it's an offering that you have and then to have them take you up on the offer? So what's that introduction, that call to action to your guest that you could also help them find their home?
In a few ways. I mean, we do a fair amount of branding and in villa experience. So we've got some really interesting guidebooks, which will very gently mention this kind of thing. We've got a couple of back of the door signs in the villa, which will say something to the effect of enjoying your holiday, making it, why don't you make it a little more permanent kind of thing. And, you know, we don't want a hard sell, but we know that if a guest phones us, they're pretty interested and keen, but we'd rather just kind of wait for the phone to ring than hassle people when they're enjoying their much well-earned and look forward to vacation and try and sell them a property. Now, as a guest, I wouldn't want that. So we just let them know that we provide the service. If they're interested, they can get hold of us.
How hard was that to introduce to your hosting business Nick, the whole real estate side, I mean, even not now knowing that you actually came in, you know, from the hotel, hospitality, operational, you know, revenue, financial side of things, to add the real estate brokerage side of it, was that a lot of education? Was it a lot of building? Was it really painful at first?
Look, it was intentional. I mean, I remember we had a villa that was sold in our portfolio to a guest. And we thought, well, hold on, there's something happening here. Why? And with all due respect to the estate agent at the time, they didn't know what they were really talking about. They didn't know all the financial performance. They didn't know the metrics. They didn't understand our business. And they couldn't sell any management services because they came from a real estate background. So we made it very intentional that we wanted to provide almost like a concierge, again, high-touch hospitality buyer's service. And that came off the back also of us deciding on the strategic direction of our business, where we're all faced with this. As our hosting businesses have grown, you start to look at different regions, you start to look at other nodes where you think, you know, you might be able to set up a management company. We intentionally have not done that. We're hyper-local, hyper-focused. We want to make sure that if somebody comes into one of our areas of operation, they see our branding, they know who we are, and we're just here and we're providing the full suite of residential services. And that is, you know, management, sales, rental, short-term rentals, long-term rentals. That has been a real interesting journey and has required a lot of training and development and learning and licensing. And it hasn't been straightforward, but I wouldn't have done it any other way. I'm so glad we get to offer it. And we've got a small team, we've got four agents, and we don't want to be huge. We just want to try and be able to provide value and sell properties in the areas in which we operate now.
And someone that buys from you can obviously, they can still go and have their property managed by someone else. I know that's not ideal, but I'm sure that has happened.
Yeah, it does. It does happen. It's one of those things. A lot of buyers don't, you know, like, as I said, we're quite, to our owners, we're an expensive management company because of the additional services that we offer our guests. So, and sometimes it doesn't work. The property's, you know, needing to be swept. It needs sort of 250, 300 nights of occupancy a year at as low cost as possible. There might be a better manager for that unit. We're not afraid of saying, you know, you're buying a property, but I don't think we can provide the management services. And that's always a bit sad, but that's the way it is. If you stick to your, ultimately, we've made a decision to try and stick to our principles and what we want to deliver in terms of service and value to all of our guests and our owners. And if you're consistent in that, it makes it very easy to be able to talk to your client.
Is that transition, and we don't need, you know, specific numbers, I'm just talking high level, does that translate into better profits for you guys and for you, the owner, Nick, the co-owner, the co-founder? So does that, because I know a lot of people, it can be very hard when you're starting a business. You're in year 3, 4, 5, 6. We actually have one of our community members right now going through this very thing of having to sit in that doing of the same thing, staying hyper-focused, staying the course, introducing, you know, new things like your brokerage. You did that, I'm sure, at a very strategic time. Does it pay off, Nick? Does it actually, being hyper-focused in your experience, does that mean more profits for the owners of the business?
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely, without a doubt. I think what it also leads to is better retention of the community. If you're delivering value to the community through different products and services, your marketing reach and your advertising reach becomes a little bit broader into a slightly different segment. Your name and your brand get spoken about a little bit more. And in terms of pure numbers, the real estate side of things is not a costly business to run. It's, you know, it's high in commissions when an agent does a deal, and there's some marketing which needs to happen. But a lot of the real estate marketing, it's hard to differentiate. You know, I know in the US you use Zillow, we have an equivalent here, and there are various other listing platforms. But, you know, you can't really differentiate. So ultimately, as a short-term rental portfolio, you're able to sell the properties that you have mandated to your guests, and no one else can tap into that market. There are a lot of real estate competitors out there who are trying to find buyers, but you have a bit of a captive audience. And if you're able to suggestively market your portfolio for sale to your guests, no one else is accessing those guests at that point in time. And in terms of profitability, look, it hasn't doubled our business. It's marginal. It's probably 10%. in terms of revenue, 10, 12, 15%, somewhere about there. But I mean, it delivers the full suite of products and services. And I think that's more important. Where it will go in the long run, I'm not sure. You're going to have some good years and some bad years. And the real estate market is hyper cyclical. And we go with the flow. We'll keep on riding the wave.
We've been fascinated by this when Sarah and I go to vacation rental conventions. Do you and your partner, when if any of your villas ever come up for sale, do you consider buying them yourselves and keeping them within your portfolio? Is that something that you talk about? Okay. So, and have you done that in the past? Ones that are just like,
absolutely.
Awesome. Yeah. I know I want to ask about that. Like, is it just like, holy smokes, do you have like a first right of refusal with your owners? Because you're one of the few people that we've chatted with. We're always like, if you know it's crushing it, why don't you just buy it? So how do you have that? This is crushing it. We're keeping this within the Knox portfolio for yourselves.
Good question. Generally, if the property is crushing it, it's not going to go cheap.
Right.
So, and we'll be doing a bit of an injustice, a bad service to our homeowner. So my partner and I have a few properties in our portfolio, but they haven't come from within the portfolio. They've been in the open market. We've identified these properties. We've kind of gone, well, there's an opportunity there. Let's bring it in. It hasn't been given the love and care that it really should have. It's got all this sort of tourism potential. Let's Knoxify it, bring it in, and then we should be able to, you know, really get a decent yield off it. And some of the numbers are absolutely astounding with the properties that we have bought.
So you you're trying to find those diamonds in the rough, like your tour, something that has tourism appeal that's on the market that you know you could do, like you said, Knoxify it, and it'll get bring in those numbers. Awesome.
Absolutely.
You're familiar with the numbers in the area.
That's right. You know, having the real estate division brings you closer to the market. Mm. So you're constantly watching it. Yeah. You're seeing what's going on. You're a little bit more closer to the coal face than you were just running a short-term rental operator.
So that right there, that's the gold. Like that's the, when you're saying, hey, 10, 12, 15%, but it's what you said is that proximity, you know, that part of that proximity to being closer to those deals. You know, if you had a look at those properties that you and your partner own together, what is that margin on those? And you wouldn't have that higher margin without doing some of the other work. And that's where I think some people get so fixated on one stream in their business, not understanding how they all, you know, are connected and flow together. Like you said, rent, buy, manage, sell, and then you're networking as you're doing that to find those properties. That's brilliant. I think that's the part that we want to share with listeners is, those doors open that way by being more connected. And like you said, you're hyper local, and you being hyper local and staying hyper local has also allowed you to see those deals.
Definitely. You get a very good idea of what a realistic price is for a property when it's being sold. And as a rental operator, we know what a fair daily rate is. It's exactly the same thing. So if you start working in a bit more of a hybrid environment and you're able to have access to what's happening in the real estate market, and you're watching it closely because you've got alerts on various listings, and you know, in your weekly meeting, you're working with the agents and you're saying what's happening out there. Have you seen anything that looks interesting? And you know, they come to us and kind of say, well, yeah, I've got a mandate on this property. It doesn't look interesting to you. And you run the numbers and you go, not quite for me, but you know what? That's a great property for somebody else who might be looking at buying and having a vacation rental that they want to use a few times a year. Like obviously, we don't need to use the properties that we bought because we live around here. So it's pure investment.
Right.
I 100%, you know, that is our strategy. We want to be hyper-local, keep it focused, keep it diversified, rather than expand internationally and have all kinds of operational complexity.
I have one final question for you. Annette might have one too. You've grown over the past, you know, two decades now. Does it get easier in terms of your investment of time, Nick? I think you could speak to a lot of hosts who are getting into managing for other people or growing their own portfolio, and they feel so burnt out, Nick. They feel so tired. And the thought of growing in any way, shape, or form feels almost impossible because they're like, well, I can't give possibly any more of myself. There's a book out there, you know, the 10X rule, but it suggests that actually 10Xing is easier than being on the smaller side. I don't mean small in terms of hyper-focus and hyper-local, but just like a few properties, a handful of properties. In your experience, has your life, your private, your personal life, has it actually gotten easier with the growth of your business and the maturity of it or not?
Every business goes through those growing pains. And at a certain point in time, it reaches a point of maturity, and that is done and achieved off its leaders, off its custodians of the business. Richard and I have been extremely intentional over the last 5 years. We've adopted a methodology called the EOSE, Entrepreneurial Operating System. You familiar with it?
Yeah.
And since we started implementing the principles of that methodology, it's made things a lot easier in terms of us being able to have longevity in the organization. Yes, burnout is a thing. That homeowner calling you at 11 p.m. on a Saturday because the neighbors complaining or whatever it might be. So it's interesting because over the last few years, we've been able to design and structure the organization. So we still know what is happening on a day-to-day basis, but we're able to put up the guardrails around where and how we can add value to the team, to our clients, and to the community. So yes, it does become easier. But I'm not too sure at what point a business can start to afford additional key members of managerial teams around them to create that buffer between you and everything else. But you know, ultimately, I think it's important that as hosts and as people in this industry, we've got to make sure that we don't need to know that, you know, the toilet isn't flushing at Villa ABC. That's fine.
Yeah.
We don't need to know everything that's going on a day-to-day basis. And it's quite important to be selective of where we're committing our energy.
And my final question for you is, I know that most of your team has been with you for over 5 years. I want to stay hyper-focused on the cleaner, because now that we know that they're staying basically in one or two properties 6 days a week, how do you keep them motivated and engaged? Give us some tips there, because that is monotonous work. It is the hardest work. And your retention is phenomenal. So if you could teach us a few things as we wrap up, that'd be awesome.
Culture.
But what culture, does that mean? Like
culture,
your culture, means, like they're at the home all by themselves, you know, like help us, like
cleaners. Yeah.
You know, like how do we do that? How do we create a culture when we're not in the home with them and make them feel that way? Especially if it's like an individual owner, how would you say we could make them feel there's a culture there?
Branding. Right? Put them in your uniform. Make them feel part of the organization. Give them a really nice apron. Look after them. When they need a bit of bleach, make sure it's there in 10 minutes. Respect them and they'll respect you. And we find this remote teams. If you're able to deliver service to them of what they want and what they need, they want to take a day's leave. Make sure that they're on the app to be able to submit that day's leave and get that response back to them immediately so they can plan their lives. It doesn't matter where they are. If you respect anyone in your organization with what you expect back in terms of service delivery, they'll stand by you. Don't forget about them. They are as important as a person sitting in the office right next to you.
Right, for sure. And then do you do any sort of incentive programs for them at all? Like after they've been on for a year or after they get X amount of reviews, what does that look like?
Correct. Every 3 months, we have a look through the reviews and they're entitled to a quarterly incentive. They get all kinds of benefits, which they wouldn't necessarily get in other organizations or in a hotel. The working conditions are really nice. You know, a hotel cleaners can apparently clean 16 rooms a day, which is absolutely mind-boggling. You know, like, so if you think about it, in a villa that's got 180 or 200 nights of occupancy, the work is not as intense. So I think the conditions really lend themselves to that sort of sense of longevity in terms of what the alternatives are. We look after them. They're paid well, they're part of the family, and we want them along for the ride for a long period of time.
Nick, where can our listeners see all the amazing properties that you manage? Where can they learn more about you and your ethos?
They need to book them when they're going on their trip to South Africa.
Yes. Tell us where they can find you.
Our main website is www.noxnox.capetown, CAPETOWN. And off that, we've got three other websites, one which will bridge into our rentals website where our guests can book. It's noxrentals.com. The second will take users through to our property website. And the third one will take users through to our management website, which is geared for our homeowners. And yeah, we'd love to see any listeners from anywhere in the world come down to Cape Town. Come to this place.
Tell them we sent you.
Don't worry about the safety. I know we've got a bad safety record. And everybody goes, oh, you're going to South Africa. You're either going to be eaten by a lion or shot at or something. You know, like a crime and everything else. It's not that bad. It really is a wonderful place to visit. 70% of our 5,000 bookings a year come in from overseas. And we have many, many return guests coming in every year and have done for the last 20 years.
Right. I didn't hear about the eating of animals eating me, but I'm glad that it's not as bad as this, that the media makes out to be. Nick, thank you so much for imparting your knowledge today to everyone who's tuning in, including Annette and myself. We learn something every time. And my gosh, you turned some things in their heads today. And I am so grateful for you sharing. With that, I am Sarah Karakayan.
I'm Annette Grant. And together we are.
Thanks for visiting. Talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Thanks for Visiting podcast. Head on over to the show notes for additional information about today's episode. And please hit that subscribe button and leave us a review. Awesome reviews help us bring you awesome content. Thanks for tuning in, and we look forward to hanging out with you next week.
Want to know our best-kept hosting secrets? They're all inside our STR Must-Haves Master List, our secret weapon that continues to transform ordinary host into extraordinary host.
The Must-Haves Master List is a checklist that we've been perfecting for over 12 years.
Picture this: your guest checks in to your short-term rental, and they're instantly wowed by the thoughtful touches and impeccable amenities. Why? Because you've got the TFE Must-Haves Master List by your side.
This checklist has all the insider secrets that even the best host didn't know they were missing.
We challenge you to take the checklist into your property today. See how many items you can mark off of this list. You didn't get them all? No worries. This is your chance to level up. So go to hostchecklist.com and grab your free copy. That's hostchecklist.com to download our coveted checklist today.